We'll be discussing the first part of chapter 10
of Canto 5, Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 10 is titled Maharaj Rahugana Meets Jad Bharat. The title of the drama that Bhakti Marg Swami created is The Three Lives of Bharat. Doesn't say what his name was when he was a deer, but it was Bharat Maharaj and Jad Bharat and a deer in between. With unique circumstances where his remembrance of his past life was very clear for both his life as Bharat Maharaj and the deer while he was Jad Bharat. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes that some say that this whole narration, the history is presented in the Bhagavatam so that we can understand how Bharat Maharaj's enthusiasm, determination, his ecstasy increased hundreds of times by this circumstance. So like misfortune becomes a great fortune. Generally, we look at misfortune as misfortune. But a great devotee looks at what it appears to be misfortune as a great fortune. I mean, misfortune in that he didn't achieve spiritual perfection. That's misfortune. In fact, he not only didn't achieve spiritual perfection, he became a deer. But on the other hand, compared to his determination as Bharat Maharaj, and now on the other side of that mistake, hundreds of times more his bhakti, his gyan, and his vairagya were multiplied. Some commentators speak that way about this lila. So that's nice. How to take adversity and turn it into opportunity. Life is filled with adversity. I'm sure you've noticed. And a Vaishnav can become very accomplished in taking the circumstances that life presents that are difficult and turning it into an opportunity. Doesn't mean we have to, you know, imitate a deaf and dumb person and so on. That's not a logical flow. But according to our own nature and our own disposition, to see some adversity as something that Krishna is presenting as an opportunity to take deeper shelter of him. I know some devotees that are going through very serious medical difficulty. And they're nice devotees. And very serious medical difficulty. And taking that medical difficulty as something that's, this is Krishna's kindness. You know, they can sometimes go there and feel very happy in accepting Krishna's kindness. And sometimes it's not so easy to accept it. It's like, especially if it's chronic, it doesn't go away, it just keeps on persisting, and then that leads to another complication, leads to another complication. And, oh, it's hard to stay. But when adversity is seen as Krishna's mercy, then it increases and intensifies one's shelter taking. And as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying here, his bhakti, his gyan, and his vairagya. So in the body of a deer and being mistreated by his stepbrothers, almost had his head chopped off by some dacoits, and remaining neutral. So this chapter is speaking now about Rahugana. And Rahugana's, he's nice. He's in the mode of passion, and because of that, he's proud, and he doesn't had a perfectly nice king, but you know, he's not like the dacoits, and he's not like his stepbrothers. So because of that, specifically our Acharya's comment, because of his capacity for softness of heart, unlike all the other dealings in Jad Bharat's life where he just said nothing, now he's going to speak something. And when he speaks, it's way up there. And when Rahugana hears it, he's like, wow, you're way up there. You're not just a palanquin carrier, you're a self-realized soul. I can tell by your behavior, and I can tell by your speech, because he's a king. He's not just an everyday person. He's a qualified person. So we'll hopefully get a little bit into the dialogue, but not too far, because there's some very nice points that come before that. The king, King Rahugana, was the king of two states, not just one, the Sindh province and Sauvira. We know where Sindh is, and Sauvira, I don't know. Does anybody know where Sauvira is? Up there somewhere. And he was planning to go to Kapilashrama, some place where Lord Kapila Dev resided, and so he was, you know, on a little pilgrimage. And because he's king, he was being carried on a palanquin, and when the palanquin carriers reached a river crossing, the river's name is Ikshumati. When they reached that river crossing, somehow they lost one of their palanquin carriers and they need to find another one. And they were searching, and they found this very stout and strong and young and, you know, apparently not too intelligent, but, you know, obedient, so good palanquin carrier. And they forced him. He didn't, like, resist, because as we heard yesterday, his nature was, when requested to do something, very simply, he would comply with that something. So he was complying. And so he was going along, carrying this heavy palanquin, big heavy poles, and a palanquin on top, and a king on top. And as the palanquin carriers were unlike Jad Bharat, Jad Bharat was a very qualified brahmana and a self-realized soul. And so as other palanquin carriers were moving forward, Jed Bard was also walking, but his nature being different than theirs caused a problem. If they were the same nature, it would have worked out, because he was being very careful about the ants. And as a brahmana, he looked, specifically says, he looked 3 feet ahead, and if there was nothing there, then he would step. And if there was something with some ants crossing, he would stop, let the ants cross, and then he would step. The sutras weren't doing that. They were just step and step, and if ants got crushed, then, you know, it just, their business was carrying the palanquin. And why was it that he was concerned about the ants? Yeah, it's only ants. But from a perspective of one who understands the soul, it's not just, you know, we can't tamper with bodies because that's the being. One who is on the spiritual conception can understand the soul is transmigrating. And so what Prabhupada explains is when one receives a particular embodiment, an ant or human or whatever, a bird or a fish or an animal or a plant or something, by nature's arrangement, there's a duration of life that is meant for that soul to be within that body. And the sinful reaction is there for interrupting that natural duration of life. We don't have the right to do that. That's the sin in killing. And it doesn't just say for a human being it's not okay, for other forms of life it's okay. As Prabhupada would refer to this regularly, thou shalt not kill. It doesn't say humans. It's, you know, kill. When I was very surprised. When I grew up, it was just like that. Thou shalt not kill. And then, you know, some time passed. I went to college and graduated from college, and I found out they changed it to thou shalt not murder. Now, what's going on? Well, what's going on is there was a lot of influence during that period of time of Eastern philosophies, and those Eastern philosophies made a distinction. There was a lot of vegetarianism, and so there was a distinction about taking the life of animals was also killing. And so to accommodate or to adjust for that, they made a distinction between killing animals and murdering a human. So thou shalt not murder. That's cheating. They can't do that. But they did that. The meaning became changed. And that was like, you know, a fundamental commandment of God. And they just like edited it out. Not nice. Like wrong. Shame on them. But one who is self-realized, it's not just the pain of the living entity being killed. It's specifically mentioned in the purport that there's a natural duration, and we don't have the right to interfere with the natural duration of a living entity's life. And for doing so, it's sin, and there's a reaction for that. So it's not that the sudras would get no reaction for stepping on ants. Ignorance is no excuse. The reaction is there. Jad Bharat, being perfectly realized, was naturally nonviolent. He didn't want to be responsible for and put those souls into difficulty for having their natural duration of life interrupted. And so he would stop till the ants passed, and then he would step. But when he was stopping and stepping, they were continuing to walk. So it was a very difficult ride for the king on top. Just a comment that Prabhupada makes in the purport is, in Lord Kapila Dev's instructions to Devahuti, there's one chapter on devotional service. And within that devotional service chapter, there's Sadhu Sangastakam, Sadhu Sangha Ashtakam. There are eight verses that are known as glorifications of sadhus and glorifications of the association of sadhus. And one of those qualifications, one of those verses starts, states some qualities of a sadhu. Sadhu Bhushanam, the ornaments of a sadhu. And one of those is this one. One is very kind and a well-wisher to all living entities. Suhridaksarvadeninam. Surada, Suhrid. Sarva Dehinam, those who are all souls who are embodied, the sadhu is a well-wisher towards all of them. No friends and enemies. Well-wisher towards everyone. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, when he spoke to his father, he expressed amazement. He said, I've heard about this thing of people that see friends and enemies, but now I understand what it is, because you have that consciousness. I heard about it, but I never saw one before. Now I see one. That's you. Friends and enemies person. But one who is a sadhu doesn't see like that. They see with kind disposition, friendly disposition to all living entities, just like the description of the six Goswamis. Dira Dira Jana Priyo. They held both the Adira and the Dira, the sober persons and the whatever the opposite of that is, the worldly people. They held them very dear to them. Now, they would behave differently towards the different classifications of persons. When you see equally different beings, embodied beings, just like the verse from Bhagavad Gita, one who sees a self-realized soul sees with equal vision the learned brahmana, the dog, the cow, the dog eater, the elephant. Although they see with equal vision, that's because they see the soul differently embodied. But it's the soul is the essence of the being, Prabhupada explains. It's not that their behavior is the same towards all different embodied beings. He would give the example, they don't, if they see a tiger, they don't go and embrace the tiger. So behaviors may be different and appropriate for the particular embodiment, but the consciousness, so your behavior can be diverse while at the same time there's a state of oneness, an internal appreciation of the presence of the soul. And according to the guna and the karma of the soul, different intelligence is provided by super soul, and different senses and embodiment is provided by super soul. That's the diversity of the conditioned state, but the essence is the soul. Pandita Samadarshana. So Jed Bart was on the Pandita platform, more than the Pandita platform, he was realized. So, the king, he was specifically said, he was very expert in political science. And in political science, there are different ways of dealing with persons that aren't in harmony with you. One is you punish them, another is you divide and conquer, another is you kill them, you know, you flatter them. Those are things that Prahlad Maharaj had no interest in, political diplomacy, political science. This king was very good at it. So he knew he wanted a smooth ride. I'm the king, so if I show anger and threaten by words or indicate by my words, I could punish the palanquin carriers, their sudras. They'll go, oh no. And so he spoke as follows. Why are you carrying this palanquin unevenly? Better carry it properly. And so, what did they do? They did the finger pointing program. It wasn't us, it was him. It's his fault. Sound familiar? We have been faithfully carrying the palanquin according to your desire, but this man who has been recently engaged to work with us cannot walk very swiftly. Therefore, we are not able to carry the palanquin with him. King Mahugana could understand the speeches given by the carriers who were afraid of being punished. He could also understand that simply due to the fault of one person, the palanquin was not being carried properly. Knowing this perfectly well, and hearing their appeal, he became a little angry. Although he was very advanced in political science and was very experienced, his anger arose due to his inborn nature as a king. Actually, King Rahugana's mind was covered by the mode of passion, and he therefore spoke as follows to Jad Bharat, whose Brahman effulgence was not clearly visible, being covered like a fire covered by ashes. So Prabhupada's purport is expressing that we're getting a case study here in Rajogun and Sattvagun. And Rajogun brings Krodha, anger. Kamesha, Krodesha, Rajoguna Samudbhava. Kamesha, Krodesha. So he's exhibiting anger because he's provoked. And the quality of goodness is, even when provoked, one remains undisturbed. So, this is the distinction between the two. And the king has sufficient qualification that when Jad Bharat becomes unprovoked, he understands something about his nature. It's not just like he's afraid, because the other ones were afraid and they spoke. It was him, it was his fault. So we have to be careful. In our case, we can also, like reflex, somebody says something. He didn't. It wasn't like really heavy. He just said, "You better carry this palanquin properly," and they, you know, immediately went to fault finding. And in that case, they were not at fault, but they didn't like just, you know, accept it and move on. They were, you know, blaming. And So we can make some choices about how we're going to respond to someone saying, you better do this properly. And it happens in the workplace all the time. I mean, I'm told, like, there's a project and there's a deadline and, you know, things not happening on time and everybody's blaming everybody instead of getting the work done. They're really busy protecting their backside, making the other person look bad. I hear about these things. And, you know, it really disturbs the atmosphere. And those who are devotees don't do that, and other people notice that. So there are different responses to when the devotees don't do that in the workplace. Some people like, hey, he's a good one to blame because he's not going to protest and fight back. And other people think, wow, you know, this person is really he doesn't participate in this, you know, blaming program. He just keeps working and gets the job done. He's the best amongst us. We're just wasting time blaming everybody. And what should a devotee do? Because sometimes devotees ask, you know, what should I do when they start doing this thing in the workplace? You know, your business, the answer is, your business is not to, like, satisfy all the complaining people. Your business is you carry out your duty. And if it's, so everything depends upon the supervisor. And if the supervisor is this, like, buffoon, then you don't need to be under a buffoon and just, like, you know, placate the foolish person. Krishna will, you know, make some arrangement, or Krishna will help you make some arrangement to be situated where you can, you know, be an honest person in the workplace. And it's difficult to find somebody who's capable of being like that, because this is the material world. But that's an ideal circumstance to be in. And to go down to this reactive mode, like the sutra, where it's blaming, or in, even in cases where you are at fault, then to not honor, acknowledge the fault and blame other people because it was their fault. That's something that, as a devotee, we are trained to not do. So, Jed Bard said nothing. And he tolerated. And then he continued carrying. But as he continued carrying, behavior didn't change, because he's still concerned about squashing ants. So then the king spoke again and said, how troublesome this is, my dear brother. It's sarcasm coming up, where he says, you certainly appear very fatigued because you have carried this palanquin alone without assistance for a long time and for a long distance. Besides that, due to your old age, you'll become greatly troubled. My dear friend, I see that you are not very firm, nor very strong and stout. Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you? It was all like sarcasm. In this way, the king criticized Jed Bharat with sarcastic words. In the introduction, Prabhupada says foul words. Jed Bharat had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, nor lean, nor thin, nor had he anything to do with a lump of matter, the combination of the five gross and three subtle elements. He had nothing to do with the material body and its two hands and legs. In other words, he had completely realized his spiritual identity. He was therefore unaffected by this sarcastic criticism from the king. Without saying anything, he continued carrying the palanquin. But when the second time came, the king burst out, "You rascal! What are you doing? You are dead, despite the life within your body? Or are you dead? Do you not know that I am your master? You are disregarding me and are not carrying me out of my order. For this disobedience, I shall now punish you, just as Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, punishes sinful people. I shall give you proper treatment so that you will come to your senses and do the correct thing." Thinking himself a king, King Rahugana was in a bodily conception and was influenced by material nature's modes of passion and ignorance. Due to madness, he chastised Jadbharat with uncalled for and contradictory words. Jadbharat was a topmost devotee and the dear abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although considering himself very learned, the king did not know about the position of an advanced devotee situated in devotional service, nor did he know his characteristics. Jadbharat was the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He always carried the form of the Lord within his heart. He was the dear friend of all living beings, and he did not entertain any bodily conception. He therefore smiled and spoke as follows. Again, Prabhupada quotes, "Surida sarvadehinam." He's not agitated. He's not feeling insulted, although he was insulted. He's not feeling any ill. "Oh, yeah, well, let me tell you some things, Mr. King." He's not in that get-back mentality. Or, like, you know, setting him straight by higher instruction. He is speaking in a friendly manner, but speaking transcendental knowledge. So, this is instructive. When we're provoked, we're devotees. Someone says something harsh, uncalled for. What do you feel? And what do you do? What do you feel depends upon your state of consciousness or the modes of nature that you're influenced by. And what you do similarly. You know, it's a state of consciousness. It's determining swabhava determines action. Swabhava means nature. But in material existence, nature is conditioned by the modes of nature. And according to one's swabhava, this, that, or the other, then one is going to exhibit. Just like a machine. In the Atlanta airport, I don't know if they still do this, but they have the airport is huge, and so they have these, like, they call them trams. That's like, you know, electric little cars, like a little train that take you from one terminal to the next terminal. And so they program the voice that comes on and tells you step back from the closing doors. That thing. And, you know, "We're now leaving Terminal 2. We'll be soon pulling into Terminal 3. Hold on to the railing." One of those things. So they programmed it to be this purposefully, this monotone. Step back from the closing doors. "You're now pulling away from Terminal 2. Next stop will be Terminal 1. Stand back, hold on to the railing." But I, you know, now approaching terminal one. It sounded like a normal voice. It was just programmed. It wasn't like a recording. It was a program, a simulated voice. And I don't know why they did it that way. Somebody decided that would be interesting. Everybody paid attention. I guess that was one of the reasons they did it. But it's just mechanical. And when the conditioned soul chooses to associate with the modes of nature, this mode, that mode, a combination of modes, then the speech, the behavior, the feelings, it's all carried out by the material energy, like a machine. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's a discussion. It's 13th chapter, there's six questions, and they're answered. One of those six questions is, what is Prakriti? And its companion is, what is Purusha? So, this is the distinction between matter and spirit. Prakriti is matter, and Purusha is spirit. So, when Prakriti is described, the 24 elements are mentioned. You know what the 24 elements are, right? Anyone not know what the 24 elements are when I say that? Okay, so you know. And when those 24 elements mix, then you get emotion, because one of the elements is the mind. And when the mind mixes with some of the other elements, you get feelings. So what are feelings? It's Prakriti. So who are we? We're not Prakriti. We're Purusha, or we're the soul, we're spirit, not matter. But we so strongly identify with matter that we not only identify with the body, but the feelings. But Sankhya tells us, you're not that body, you're not that mind, you're not that feeling. Well, then who am I? Your spirit soul. You have spiritual feelings, but those feelings about someone says something nice to you and you feel nice. Someone says something harsh and cruel and mean-spirited and you feel hurt. Why do they speak like that? You know, we feel these different things and identify with it. But it, from a at least Jan Bharat wasn't feeling any of those things. He was a realized soul. So when he spoke to Rahugana, it wasn't out of, you bully, why are you speaking like that? He was very detached. He recognized Acharya's comment specifically. He recognized in the king something that he did not find in his stepbrothers or anybody else that he had interacted with. He just, out of his whole life, he hadn't even spoken yet. And now he's speaking. Because out of Suhrid with his stepbrothers, you know, what would they understand? So he didn't say anything. The Dacoits, he didn't say anything. But with the king, he said something. And here's what he said. My dear king and hero, whatever you have spoken sarcastically is certainly true. Actually, these are not simple words of chastisement, for the body is the carrier. The load carried by the body does not belong to me, for I am spirit soul. There is no contradiction in your statements. Because I am different from the body. I am not the carrier of the palanquin. The body is the carrier. Certainly, as you have hinted, I have not labored carrying the palanquin, for I am detached from the body. You have said that I am not stout and strong, and these words are befitting a person who does not know the distinction between the body and the soul. The body may be fat or thin, but no learned man would say such things about the spirit soul. Oh, you fat spirit soul. You're a skinny soul. As far as the spirit soul is concerned, I'm neither fat nor skinny. Therefore, you're correct when you say that I'm not very stout. Also, if the object of this journey and the path leading there were mine, there would be many troubles for me. But because they relate not to me, but to my body, there's no trouble at all. Fatness, thinness, bodily or mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement, desire for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. A person absorbed in the material bodily concept is affected by these things, but I am free from all bodily conceptions. Consequently, I'm neither fat nor skinny, nor anything else you have mentioned. He's getting this wonderful Sankhya Bhagavad Gita class from his palanquin carrier. In the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that those, Madhvacharya says, those that are in the bodily conception of life become materially affected. That means the soul is not affected, but there are ongoing material transformations. You know, this wiggles, causing that to wiggle. It, you know, the cause and effect of matter moving moves into another state of matter. One becomes implicated in those reactions, actions, reactions, if there's misidentification with the body. For one who, in contrast, does not identify with the body, one is completely detached. It doesn't mean that the detached soul doesn't know this is wiggling and that's moving that. They know. I'll give a couple of examples from Prabhupada's life. One of them happened right here in Vrindavan. It was at the time of the Krishna Balaram deity installation. And just prior to the installation, there were many persons sitting in Prabhupada's room. I wasn't there. I was in the temple room helping with, you know, the arrangements. But there were a number of devotees sitting in Prabhupada's little sitting room there, his quarters. And someone spilled some water. And, you know, from where his table is, there's that little fireplace area. And then he was walking from his table. He got up at the end of the discussion and was walking, and his foot slipped on the water, the part of the marble floor where there was water. And he caught himself before he crashed with his right hand, you know, caught on that little area before the fireplace. And he twisted his ankle. And it started to swell. So he chastised whoever had spilled the water and hadn't wiped it up, causing, you know, big inconvenience for Prabhupada. And then he called for certain leaves and certain herbs and had them make a poultice, and he tied it up with string. And he knew how to do it. It had some Ayurvedic skill. And I remember, I didn't know about any of that, but I knew because when he came in to perform the arti and then sat on the Vyasasan after the deities were installed and gave a lecture, I was sitting right in front and I saw his, all this, it wasn't a bandage, it was string tied around leaves, and underneath the leaves was a poultice to like bring down the swelling. He was certainly aware that there was swelling and that there was pain, but he wasn't identifying with it. He just, you know, did the needful. He was more concerned about training his disciples to not do something foolish. Or another one was, this Harisori Prabhu told me, Prabhupada had an abscess tooth. You know what that means, abscess? It means severely infected. It's one thing if you have like a cavity in your tooth, then it, you know how much that hurts. But abscess is it's so severe that your whole mouth has swollen because there's infection inside. And your mouth is very sensitive. So he had like, you know, an abscess in his... So the devotees asked Prabhupada, can we take you to a dentist and he can treat the problem? He said, no, so just give me some cloves. So he was just chewing cloves so he could just go on with his service. And a couple of days later, he was like, still got this abscess, and he's taking his prasadam, and he reached in his mouth and pulled out the tooth and handed it to Harisori and said, here, you can keep this. And he just kept on taking prasadam. That's not us. We're like, oh, take me to the doctor, take me to the dentist, some shots of Novocaine, oh. Even when his, during his final days, when his body was just withering and withering and withering, and he hadn't eaten, and you know, the temperature was rising because it was his body was becoming no longer fit for habitation. He called Brahmananda. Brahmananda came. Said, Brahmananda, do you have the key? See, key to what, Srila Prabhupada? Key to the Elmira. Key to the Elmira? He said, yes, I gave you some years ago the key to the Elmira. Elmira is a, like, you know, what are these things? A storage place. He'd find the key to the Elmira. And he couldn't, like, couldn't find it and couldn't find it. And then he remembered he tied it to his Brahmin's thread. So he said, I found the key, Prabhupada. So he said, go to the Elmira, unlock the Elmira door. Inside the Elmira door, there's another drawer. Inside the drawer, there's another key. And that key will go to another drawer where there's a document. Bring the document. So I went to Elmira, unlocked, opened the other drawer. There's another key. And inside the key, it opens another space and pulled out. And there was a something. I don't know what you call it. Some kind of a document, a bond or something that was maturing that day. And he said, you know, take this, deposit it in the book account, and go print the something, something, something. Like, you know, his body is shot. But his, you know, his super soul is giving him the remembrance of something that on that very day was maturing and it was to be taken care of, and he knew exactly. Although it happened years ago, and Brahmananda, like, you know, completely forgot about it. Prabhupada didn't. His mental clarity, when you read the Bhaktivedanta purports in that final chapter that he translated, and if you didn't know his bodily condition, you would think he was like, you know, Mr. Fit. But his bodily condition was wasted. But his mental sharpness was so clear, crystal clear. He knew perfectly well, not theoretically, with full realization, he wasn't the body. Whether it was, you know, an abscess tooth or a twisted ankle or, you know, body being finished. When we get a little problem, you know, you get a flu or maybe a fever, or, you know, you stub your toe or, you know, something, what happens? Attention goes completely to that thing. How much attention do we pay to our little toe? But if you crash it against something, you know, all attention goes to that little spot because we're identifying with the body, and it's not artificial, but for one who is on the self-realized platform, they're aware, but their attention doesn't go there. Jadbhat was aware of what was going on in all of these circumstances, but he was fully detached, because he was absorbed in Krishna. That's the symptom of ones who are spiritually advanced. All these other things, like knowledge and detachment, they're byproducts of Krishna consciousness. We don't strive for knowledge. We don't strive for detachment. We strive for Krishna consciousness. Perhaps in service to Krishna, we may read Bhagavad Gita and read Krishna's words. And to please Krishna, we may detach ourselves from something that would take us away from Krishna. But it's for the devotional purpose. Automatically, because of the devotional purpose, detachment follows. That's what the Bhagavatam teaches us, isn't it? Causeless knowledge and detachment. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayatahaitakam. From Vasudeva Bhakti. So that's the platform that Jadbhat was on, and he's now exhibiting this before the king. My dear king, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead, though alive. In this regard, I can only say that this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. As far as you're thinking that you are the king and master, and thus trying to order me, this is also incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today you are king and I'm your servant, but tomorrow the position may be changed, and you may be my servant and I your master. So these temporary circumstances are created by providence. And in fact, two lifetimes ago, he was the emperor of the world, including, you know, the Sindh province and the other one. I was the master and you were the servant. In the second, this is the fifth canto Bhagavatam, in the second canto Bhagavatam, there is this phrase that for one who is not engaged in self-realization, they're like, what's the, something like a body flapping in the wind? Dead body flapping? Something like that. And a little anecdotal thing. Once a news reporter was interviewing Srila Prabhupada, and probing, what's your consciousness, Swamiji? You know, so he said, when you're traveling through the airport like this, what do you see? The problem is that so many dead bodies flapping. He didn't even explain, he just said it. But this is what Jadbhat is saying also. You're saying, I'm dead. Well, of course, you know, the body, in fact, is not alive. The body is never alive. It's animated by the soul, but the life is not matter. Life is life, and life within matter animates life. But life is the soul, not the symptoms of animated matter, any more than a robot is alive. It's just a machine, and his body is also just a machine. Now that may not seem so like soft and warm and fuzzy, but it's, you know, Samkhya. It doesn't mean we don't care. You become feelingless. You can have feelings, but feelings are particular to the soul. It's maybe a little difficult to understand, but Hari Sori was describing one of his devotees, I think it was Shyam Sundar, somebody was driving Prabhupada's car, and Prabhupada was in the back seat. And he was driving fast, and Prabhupada kept telling him, slow down, because by driving fast, you can more easily have an accident. So drive at a... And he was saying, people get this technology, and you want to burn it. Not exactly that language, but you don't properly use it. Use it carefully. And then they were driving along, and then they saw this accident that had just happened. It was the Delhi-Agra road, and on the side was a car that smashed into a tree, and some bodily parts were strewn all over the place. And one person had gotten out of their car and was hysterical because it had apparently just happened. And the devotees, Hari Sori shared this, they were like looking out the window like, gasping and gaping in this horrible scene. And Prabhupada was just chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He said, unfazed. He was surprised because, he's a saintly person. He should be feeling like what we're feeling. It's not that he didn't see it, and it's not that he's an unfeeling person, but it's certainly great misfortune just to receive a material body, and when whether one gives up the material body this way, that way, it's unfortunate that we're embodied. Anyway, that's how Prabhupada behaves in that particular circumstance. But in another circumstance, this is something Shyama Sundar said. Once Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, he was appreciating, he was using this phrase, I always looked upon Srila Prabhupada as a magician. And what by that I mean, he would always do something very surprising. You could expect the unexpected when you were with Prabhupada. One time we were in Hawaii, and we were making plans where Prabhupada might go. And they said, Prabhupada, it's mango season in India. Why don't you go to India? We know that you like mango season, mangoes. And they were suggesting, they've invited you to go to the London Rath Yatra, and you're like different invitations to go all around the world. And when they were opening the mail, they got this letter of invitation to go to Moscow. And it was Professor Katovsky saying, yes, I would invite you. And Prabhupada said, let's go at once, make the arrangement, get the visas. And they said, but Prabhupada, it's winter, it's so cold in Moscow. And he said, let us go to Moscow at once. So another time they were in Los Angeles, he was describing like this, they were in Los Angeles, and another, invitations and invitations. And some invitation came from Mexico City. And Prabhupada said, can I see where that is on the map? And they pulled it out on the map. And he was adventuresome. And so let's go to Mexico City. And when they got there, he was one of several speakers. And it was in a big arena, where an outdoor arena that they didn't know this before when they accepted the invitation, but it was where they have bullfights. You know, at bullfights, they might, take swords and stick swords and anyway, red cape and when it's all over, the bull goes on this platform and they chop the bull. that's like when, you know, the party's over. And it's, you know, blood all over the place, and they cleaned up the blood. And so that was the place where they were going to have Prabhupada stand, and along with the other people, and address the people in the arena. And when they saw that, they didn't want Prabhupada to go stand on that place where they slaughter bulls. I think what happened was, if I remember this correctly, they went ahead and did it because Prabhupada said, "We've come all this distance, so let us serve Krishna this way." When they were walking from the event, there were several strong, you know, tall, young, hefty Americans. But they were walking through this crowd, and, you know, in crowds anything could happen. So they were trying to be attentive to making sure that nothing would happen to Prabhupada. But in the distance, they saw a drunken man, you know, big sombrero, big straw hat, and kind of staggering around. And Shyamasundara said, "I was thinking, we better be careful. Who knows what this man might do?" But he didn't do anything. And as they got closer, all of a sudden, the man started charging straight at Prabhupada in a drunken state. And it was happening too quickly, Shyamasundara said, to do anything. So Prabhupada lifted his cane, bonked the guy in the head. Adjusted his shoulders and just walked out. Prabhupada the magician. And when they first got to the place, they had a nice room for Prabhupada in this nice hotel, and they took Prabhupada to his room, and, you know, and brought him into his room so he could sit down and rest if he needed to or whatever, and they closed the door. And he came back after a while and just to check to see if Prabhupada needed anything, and he was looking up in the air like this, and tears were streaming down his eyes. And he just motioned with his head and said, "Take that thing away." And what should have Prabhupada? So he turned around and looked from Prabhupada's vantage. So he was seated on the edge of the bed, and above the door there was a crucifix of Christ nailed to the cross. And seeing that, Prabhupada was crying, saying, "How can they worship their spiritual master this way? They meditate upon him being tortured. What kind of love is this? Take it away." So he certainly had feeling. At the same time, detachment. So feeling on the platform of the soul and detachment from matter, and, you know, interested in service to the Supreme Soul and bringing souls to the Supreme Soul. So that detachment of a transcendentalist is something that we should not pass judgment on, because we can't quite understand what that is. It's not, detachment doesn't mean not caring. It's separating the soul and the well-being. The real problem of the soul is not this condition or that condition. The real problem of the soul is forgetfulness of Krishna and staying focused upon bringing remembrance of Krishna into the lives of those who one interacts with.
One more.
"My dear king, if you still think that you are the king and that I am your servant, you should order me, and I should follow your order. I can then say that this differentiation is temporary, and it expands only from usage or convention. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Everyone is being forced by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant. Nevertheless, you think that you are the master and I am the servant? I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? So he's like, I honor your ignorance. Although it's wrong. It's ignorance. The reality is, this is a mistaken conception. But you feel very invested in this mistaken conception. On the one hand, I'll let you know, my dear sir, this is a mistaken conception. But you're thinking of yourself in that way, so you can order me and I'll accept whatever it is. Please tell me what you'd like me to do. Detached. Amazing. Amazing. How a transcendentalist can move through this temporary world and not be caught up in it. Most unique. Like his father, Rishabhdev, was, of course, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he was also exhibiting this abject detachment. He exhibited in a different way. He moved about the world. Although he was previously emperor of the world, he was moving about the world like a madman, an avaduta, wearing no clothing, just going here and going there as if he was mad. He wasn't mad, but as if he was mad, and people would taunt him and tease him and throw things at him and call him names and undisturbed. And so this is different. Chad Bart was wearing clothes, but when he spoke, it became very clear that he's on another platform, but still, you know, recognizing those that aren't, and at least in this case with Rahugana, because of recognizing some qualification to receive what he said, speaking transcendental knowledge. Big surprise for Rahugana. So we're not going to get to finish all of the discussion, but I'll end there and we'll continue a little bit later. As it goes on, he goes through this Sankhya section, and by the end of the chapter what happens is Rahugana asks for the palanquin to be set down. He goes before Jed Bharat and offers his dandavats to his palanquin carrier and says, who are you? Yeah, what you appear to be. You're a perfectly realized soul. And how did that happen? How did you become a perfectly realized soul? And can you enlighten me further? Instruct me? I've not found a person so qualified as you in my whole life. My big offense for speaking harsh, nasty words to you, but to speak of even engaging you as a palanquin carrier, I should serve you. So he had that, King Rahugana, had that capacity to be very humble in recognizing a qualified person when he came across one. Some persons can't recognize a qualified person when they come across one. And they just don't know how to behave. Rahugana did. He had that culture. And so he became enlightened by Jed Bharat's association. Okay, so we'll end there for now and see if there's any comments or questions. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I have two questions. First one is have you heard that Krishna spoke of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna so that he can speak to us? And same with Maharaj, some stories like here, Maharaj Maharaj story, and Jay and Jay, there was Hiranyakashipu in Hiranyakashipu. So some kind of feeling is there in my heart that Is it they are acting like a Lord's plan, they are doing as a service, or it is a real story, like it is just for giving us a teaching, even in the bhava stage also we have to be very careful. So that was my question.
I'm not sure I understand the question. He's Jadbar is not like Jai Vijay. He's not fallen. He's not just behaving for our edification. His behavior is edifying. It's very educational. But it's not like he's just kind of taking that role on so that we could get some teachings. Is that what your question is?
He's not necessarily Vishnu Pitama is there. He's also acting as a like a devotee, he's acting.
Who is? Bhishma?
Bhishma Dev. Same like we see Ravan and Kumkaran, they are the devotees basically. So they are the devotees.
Yeah. That's unique. That Prabhupada writes, that situation with Jai and Vijay, it is unique. We should not, to expand, we should not think that all those who are in the category of demons opposing the personality of Godhead, they're just Jai and Vijays in disguise. They're demons, and Jai and Vijay is unique. The exception. So, no. In one sense, like Bhishma Dev, he's acting against the Pandavas to fulfill some purpose of Krishna, and that's revealed in the purports that Bhishma Dev is showing, or Krishna is showing through Bhishma Dev, that however great one may be, if one fails to protect women, you're finished. It's a great abomination, and even you may be Bhishma Dev, you'll be punished, you'll be destroyed. It's so important for protection of women. But it's not like Bhishma Dev was thinking, well, here's some service for Krishna, I'll do that for a while. It was induced by the Lord's internal potency. But Bhishma Dev was, carrying out his service unto Krishna as best he could. And Bharat Maharaj, he's certainly serving, the lesson of his life is very instructive. But it's not like he was pulling out his chin saying, that would be some nice service to do for Krishna, I think I'll do that for a while. His forgetfulness, his misuse of his free will by forgetting his practices and forgetting the personality of Godhead and becoming attached to the deer and becoming a deer and living as a deer. It's instructive of how he responded to that purposeful mistake. But it's not like, he was acting that way so that he could instruct us how we shouldn't do the same thing. Not like that. Not like Jai Vijay or something. Yes? Second question?
What we feel depends upon the state of consciousness and
sure.
In what mode we are in.
Yes.
So, Maharaj, this question is always I'm having this question from a long speech. Like we say, we have to develop the qualities. That is one of the aim of whatever we are practicing. The qualities.
Yes.
So, I see in my case when I'm dealing in this material job situation and different situations are there. So, this question was there, mostly when somebody says something. So, I don't feel that good. But at the same time, I have to act in that particular way so that Krishna should be pleased.
Yeah.
So, here Maharaj is telling you, whatever you feel, it depends upon the state of consciousness.
Well, your consciousness can be, I am Krishna's devotee. I'm not so advanced in devotion to Krishna, but I'd like to be pleasing to Krishna. So I'm feeling these lower emotions. Now I can choose to just like let it happen, just like get angry and get disturbed and just like jump in the pool. Or I can choose to not identify with that emotion that I know it's there, and instead let me identify with what will be pleasing to Krishna. At least let me try to go in that direction. To my capacity, let me try. That's bhakti. And that's a choice. I may not be able to go so high, but I can try to my capacity. And you invest consciousness there, and by so doing, you're withdrawing consciousness from the other, and what happens to the other is it just withers. Or you can give it life by going there and getting all worked up. Or somewhere in between, just like no, it's cultivation. It's not pretending. It should be done not pretending, it should be done as a cultivation. And you practice and you practice and you practice and you practice and you practice, and it becomes second nature. Instead of that one, it becomes the predominant nature. You've heard that expression before, right? One is the conditioned nature, and the other is by second nature, by practice. It's like, if you learn to say, excuse me, you know, like you're walking along and you bump into somebody accidentally because you're paying attention over here and you bump into somebody. Just, it becomes second nature to say, oh, excuse me. Initially, it may be, you practice it. Because you may be thinking, you know, what's wrong with this person? Why aren't they seeing that I'm important and I'm trying to make my way going somewhere? But by practice, it becomes, oh, excuse me, I got in your way. And after some time, it just becomes second nature. Not imitation, not artificial. It's practice, you're cultivating. Someone else? Yes?
Well, it's from the purport of chapter, verse 11. The conceptions of good and bad are on mental speculation.
Yes?
This is good and this is bad is not a mistake. Please elaborate on that.
It's from the transcendental perspective that is being said. You know the example, wet stool, dry stool? Like that. So someone can say, this one's good and that one's bad. And the other one can say, no, no, that one's bad and this one's good. Some transcendental perspective, it's mental concoction. Or one man's food is another man's poison. Like that. Depending if you have a certain bodily constitution, eating a certain something could be very harmful. And for another one, it's medicine. Take that same something and it'll help cure some illness. What's good and what's bad? And if it's based upon, well, according to my mental state, according to my physical or mental state, this is good, but then as Jed Bard is saying, that's temporary and can completely change around again. So, in that sense, it's mental concoction. Now, are there some things that are absolutely good? And the answer is absolutely. And there are things that are relatively good, depending upon circumstances, and relatively bad on other circumstances, yes. Okay. Something else? Yes?
Like, whatever your devotee does is perfect in its way, but then what I want to ask is that many people misunderstand also already, and why is it like happens in the sense that it is perfect?
Well, which is the, when you say it happens, can you?
It happens in the sense.
It happens that some people misunderstand. Why does it happen that people misunderstand?
What I'm trying to
say is, you're making it difficult for yourself, and it's making it difficult for me.
So my question is that because they are under the
conditioned souls are under the modes of nature.
Yes.
And therefore?
No. So I'm just asking is that this perfection we see is because of the perfect nature of Krishna. I mean, because they are under Krishna, or you could say, they are controlled or completely controlled. And there are people who react to things.
Sure.
In a sense, what I mean is that some big calamity happens. Even the most sanest person may react to being a devotee. He tends to react in a very tangent way. Is that for a pure devotee, it's because he is completely under the Lord controls his senses completely? That's what he can say.
That's one of the things. You can certainly say that if a pure devotee, their senses are controlled by the master of the senses. I still don't know what your question is.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay, let's come back. You think it through and we'll come back. Anyone else? Yes?
Maharaj, from yesterday class, there was one sentence you quote that we should not rest on our sorrow.
Yeah.
And Maharaj, I see in my case, and usually the training is that we do something for some time. And after that, then I have a pause and have a rest. So in that situation, then how we should keep continuing that?
Well, keep continuing with the understanding that it's your constitutional position to serve. And at different times, the volume of service that's required is greater, and other times the volume of service is normal, and other times the volume of service is less. But constitutionally, we're servants. So it's not that we take a break from our constitutional position and stop serving for a period of time because, you know, we need a break from being constitutionally servants. We continue because we're constitutionally servants. Immediately after completing something, the next moment we're still a servant of Krishna. We just continue in service to Krishna in some capacity, in some manner or another, because that's our position. It's nice. Resting on laurels phrase means it's like, you know, taking a vacation. You know, for a devotee, we you know, let's say, know, preparing for this, you've been engaged a lot, you know, making arrangements for what we're doing. And now, you know, you're on your way back to your home. So it should not be, you know, it's over now, and you know, I can take a break. I now have another service and another service and another service. It's of a different nature than this one, but service and service and service. So maybe one of the services I need to like spend some more time because I didn't get to read so much. I'm going to spend a little more time now in reading. But it's not a break from devotional service. It's another form of devotional service. And then et cetera, et cetera. Because we're servants. You know, I've been absorbed in our GBC meetings for 19 days. And, you know, then I had something and went to Hyderabad right away and, you know, very busy weekend and then something and now this. So I'm behind in correspondence. So I don't need a break from devotional service to do correspondence. It's another service. Different varieties.
So Maharaj, when you fail to do these things, it's because of we don't have that strength?
Well, we just don't have a sense of who we are. We have a sense of I'm an enjoyer, and I, you know, it's now time to enjoy. Instead of in time, but you know, for a devotee, service is our enjoyment. It's our nature. It's our happiness. You know, it's not service. Doesn't mean go in a rock pile with a sledgehammer and break rocks. Service means, you know, Krishna, what would you like me to do? And some service, wonderful. And you know, I'm monitoring according to the instructions that I've heard of. I need to chant, I need to hear, I need to pray, I need to worship, and I need to do some other things too. And they're all services. Anything else? Yes.
Emotional disturbances for other living entities can maybe interruption in their life term or must not.
Emotional disturbances for other living beings can they be what?
Interruption to their life.
Can they be an interruption in their life?
Yes,
can they cause or be due to? Cause or result?
Other living entities, like family members or others, if I. Some wrong ways.
Sure. Just exist and will cause emotional disturbance for other living beings. Well, what are you to do? Go out of existence? That's not an option. What to do? That's going to happen. It's the nature of this place. I'm, you know, it's the same question, and I'm giving the same answer. It's unfortunate, but it's the nature of this place. Just like what it seems like what Kiran was saying, you know, someone that's on the platform of pure devotional service, their activities are flawless, and someone else is disturbed. And so it's not just somebody that's in the modes of nature and someone else is disturbed. It can be a flawless person and not and beyond the modes of nature and someone is disturbed. That's the nature of this place. We should try to act in such a way that's minimized. And even in so doing, even when it's a perfected soul, it's going to happen. Just because the modes of nature are acting. Like Prabhupada gives the example of the bamboo. So there's a bamboo forest and the wind blows, and as the wind blows, the bamboo hits and makes a really loud sound. Bang! I've heard it. You know, there's such a thing happens. It's, you know, it's shocking when you hear it. But that, you know, when you keep hearing it and keep hearing it, you realize, oh, it's just the wind blowing in the bamboo forest. One doesn't take such things seriously. It's just the way things are. Wind blows in the bamboo forest and there's loud banging sounds. And sometimes sparks come and sometimes a spark causes a fire. It's just the nature of the place. So as Vaishnavas, we don't just like shrug our shoulders and say, ah, who cares? We try to act in harmony with Krishna's will as best we can, pleasing Krishna, knowing that some living entities are going to be unhappy with that. We continue. Because our who is it that we're trying to please? We're trying to please Krishna. But we follow Krishna's will and Krishna's plan. Reasonable living entities are going to be reasonable and appreciate. And unreasonable living entities are not. And there's nothing that we can do about that. Wish them well while they're disturbed. It's just like what Jan Bharat is doing with the king. The king is all disturbed because he doesn't want to step on ants. So I guess I better step on ants so the king won't get disturbed. No. Next. Not just the workplace. Try in your home. Try, you know, in the assembly of devotees. I was using that as like, you know, that's over there. It's more comfortable. Bring it closer and it gets... Go ahead.
So, how can we react on our consciousness we must have so that we will not be exploited by others?
Oh, we don't have to worry about that. Krishna will protect us. I remember one time I was on Harinam Sankirtan on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. You know, big Harinam party going down Manhattan. And it was my turn to go distribute books, and I was distributing some magazines to the people on Fifth Avenue. One man pulled me over and said, come over here. I've been watching you. And, you know, I like what you're doing, and you're a person of good character. I have some advice for you. Be very careful. People will try to take advantage of you. And I remember thinking, you know, what are you talking about? Not like big surprise people will try to take advantage of you. But, you know, I'm not going to, like, be defensed about people who are going to try to take advantage of me, because I'm here doing what my spiritual master asked me to do. Whatever protection I require, yoga kshemam bahamyaham, that's all I have to be concerned about. The sense of protection is there for one who is a surrendered soul. So we may do practical things. One of the practical things is just, you know, be good at what you do. And if people are unhappy because you're good at what you do, you know, that's their problem. But, you know, you should act above criticism, knowing that there'll still be criticism. Prabhupada writes that directly in his Bhagavatam. Knowing full well, still some people. Now, there's the story of the cobra and Narada Muni. You know that story? You know the story? Okay. So, we may, you know, act in such a way that ill-wishing persons won't do something, and, you know, in a pragmatic way. But ultimately, you know, we're depending upon Krishna, not some pragmatic solution. We're depending on Krishna. If Krishna gives some intelligence to do something, we may do with the intelligence that Krishna gives. But ultimately, you know, who can hurt you? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says only yourself can hurt you. Who can hurt you? So what you should do is, for protection, is take shelter of Krishna. And if Krishna gives some intelligence, don't obsess about it, but if Krishna gives some intelligence, then you can act. Okay. Why does it happen that chanting Hare Krishna mantra means please engage me in your service, but when actually a something comes practically to do, then devotees something for an excuse that I won't be able to do it, this service. My rounds are not finished. I think I get the idea. We're chanting, Krishna, please engage me in service. Someone comes along and says, here's some service. I say, I'm sorry, Prabhu, I got to chant Hare Krishna. If I have to do the service. Is that it? That's it. Well, we do have to finish our service. I mean, we have to finish our chanting. But, you know, here in Vrindavan, there was one devotee, Prabhupada disciple named Vishal. I don't mind using his name, because everybody knows this, that knows Vishal. He was chanting his 16 rounds all day long. And, of course, engaging in conversation, whatever he wanted to. But whenever approached to do some service, he would smile and say, I've got to finish my rounds, Prabhu. All day long, every day, consistently. He avoided service on that basis. So your question is, what's the use of such chanting? Because, you know, yes, you're right. Because it was at least it appeared to be a very bad excuse to not engage in service, needful practical service. And Prabhupada would sometimes, I was told, you know, particularly instruct him, Vishal, do something useful. But I have Prabhupada, I'm chanting my 16 rounds. So, you know, he didn't get it. But on the other hand, there are times when we should stick to our chanting and not go run off and do some service. Because of our weakness of attraction for chanting. Because go and do some service and go and do some service and go and do some service, and before you know it, the end of the day is there and you haven't finished your chanting. So best is chant early in the morning so your chanting is completed before you begin some other things. But, you know, there's some things that, like cooking and things like that, that have to be done in the morning when everyone else is cooking, when everyone else is chanting, or deity worship if there's deities or something. Some services are needed. So such persons should be given some block of time. Later in the day, they can complete their chanting uninterrupted. You got your question squared away now? Another one, okay.
When interacting with devotees, you are taught to see other devotees as how our mentors or our spiritual master sees them. Can you explain more?
Well, let's go to Krishna. And how does Krishna see? And we know how Krishna sees from what he says in Bhagavad Gita. So see that way. Shastra Chakshusha or Jnana Chakshusha, like that. So if now back to your question, if the spiritual master is showing some particular tolerance, where from our side we're not so tolerant, then that this statement that you've made applies. They're showing some deference because they see something that we don't see. They have a vision of how to help this soul go towards Krishna in a way that we don't have the capacity to see. So it's at least try to appreciate, although I don't see this, my spiritual master sees this, or my mentor sees this, and so I'll just defer to them. I may not be able to see what they see, but at least I'll defer to their perspective and their vision and support that. Although I don't, you know, it's not in my conscious awareness of why they're doing as they're doing, or guiding as they're guiding, or instructing as they're instructing, or interacting as the way they're interacting. I don't. But I trust them. They see something. They have a plan. I'll support them.
Seems to work, but then how does it work?
Huh?
I mean, when you apply that, it seems to work somehow. I don't know how it works, but it works somehow.
Okay.
How you believe in that principle?
Okay.
So Bharat Maharaj, he is a great devotee of the Lord, but in spite of that, he faced many obstacles. And the next statement is, he also had great faith in the Supreme Lord, yet he had to take birth as a deer. When he got attached to a deer, and we have big burdens to the deal. So in our life also there are many challenges or obstacles. And there are many attachments also. So what should we do about these attachments and these challenges?
Well, first of all, going back take Prahlad Maharaj, who also had deep attachment to the Supreme Lord, but he didn't take birth as a deer. Why is it that Bharat took birth as a deer and Prahlad Maharaj didn't? Because Prahlad Maharaj didn't make the conscious, purposeful mistake that Bharat Maharaj made. And so Bharat Maharaj had to accept the consequences of his purposeful mistake or purposeful choice. But the mercy of the Lord wasn't withdrawn. As we were discussing, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur made the arrangement that his intensity of bhakti would 100 times amplify because of his benevolence and compassion to Bharat Maharaj. But he still made the mistake. So one lifetime of difficulty. Body the deer. But that was purposeful to also help him become, you know, regretful of his mistake. Like realize, wow, this was a big mistake. A big mistake. Now how should we face? The question at the end of what you translated, that's what we've been speaking about this whole time, is what we've been, how do we face obstacles and challenges? In short, see them as something that Krishna is sending your way to somehow increase your thought of Krishna, your dependence upon Krishna, your service attitude towards Krishna, Krishna sending these circumstances your way. That doesn't tell you, now here's what I should do. But it tells you the consciousness that you should be carrying, and in that way, by Krishna's mercy, the intelligence of what to do may come. It may not come also. You may like not be clear what to do, but at least you can be clear, this is the principle. Krishna is giving me an opportunity. I'm still not yet clear what to do. But the opportunity is to increase my dependence upon him, my devotion for him, my gratitude to him. And as best I can, I'll make choices how to address the circumstance that he sent. Volume.
Those things which we know that is a privilege, we are not able to exercise our
privilege. Can you give an example? We know what to do and we can't do it. We know what to do and we don't do it.
Yeah, this, we know that this is correct. Like you said, that we know what we are there, we are there to get.
Okay.
So, how do we still like this?
That's called the process of bhakti yoga. That's what we should do. Follow the process of bhakti yoga. The most powerful means of bridging that gap is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra attentively. That's the one stroke that takes care of all gaps. Fill that one, all the other ones get filled. Like somebody was asking, there are so many things that I have to work on, I get spun out if I try to do all of them. Just take that one. Oh, it's too difficult. Give me an easier one. Okay, take an easier one, but it won't fill all the gaps. Okay? Okay, so now you know what to do. Yeah, but... to your capacity, you go down the path of working on that one. And it will give you strength to work on any one or all of the others. One step at a time. Yes?
Yeah. So when I try to put some effort, like I try to say something, but it doesn't work so much. So
well, let's go through what your options are and select one. You could go out of existence. You can't do that. Have a lobotomy. Can't do that. Tolerate. Well, we can try to tolerate. We'll keep that on the list. Try to tolerate. Bring my attention to Krishna. That's a good one, but like, you know, it's hard for me to do that. Okay, what are some of the other options? Associate with devotees that don't have that situation and, you know, become like them through that association. That's a nice one. But I find that when I do that, I'm just like telling them all about my mental stuff instead of like taking their association. I'm giving my association rather than taking their association. So learn how to take their association. And one of the ways you do that is by serving. You serve. And then you, as you serve, you see you step, your attention is, because you're serving, your attention is going to them, and you see, wow, look at this quality, look at that quality, and I admire that. So by that admiration and by that service association, those qualities become more your qualities. Just in those moments, you've been thinking about how nice their qualities are instead of your problems. And the more you serve those that are free from that disturbance that you mentioned, you take on their qualities. And that's part of surrender to Krishna, or part of being Krishna conscious. It's part of uplifting your consciousness to Krishna consciousness. And that's, you know, maybe of the options, the strongest one, and then that can give you some strength to tolerate, and it can give you some strength to be patient and withdraw your attention from asat and place it upon sat. It just gives you the strength to do that. And it's our nature. We're servants. So it's connecting you with a higher platform just by the very nature of the activity. That and having it with faith, or investing faith in the very basic devotional practices, Shravanam, Kirtanam. Strong sadhana, service, and through the medium of service association with advanced souls. And there will come some strength to do the other things. Tolerate, rise above, and just on an instruction to do so. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunya Vavarjana. There's a chapter 2, just an instruction from Krishna. Rise above the modes of material nature. Become transcendental to all of them. And you know, you can say, yeah, but you know, the instruction is stronger. So take shelter of the instruction and continue to strive like that. So it's like you're in darkness, and there's, you know, it's an overcast sky, so there's no light coming from the night sky, and off in the distance you see a light. So you just keep walking towards the light, and you'll get there. Even you may be some distance away. It's very reasonable. There's a light, and if I go toward the light, I'll be in the light instead of in darkness. Just go towards the light. Just keep going. Whatever obstacles may be in between here and there, just keep going. Take another step, take another step. However distant it is, you'll get there. Yes. Biologic, Prabhupada has expressed it this way. Biologically, modern science says, every single cell in the body is in some stage of transformation and is being eliminated and replaced by other cells. So the body that's sitting here right now is different than the body that came and sat down when I first came. On that basis. Cells are dying and being replaced by other cells. The body is changing every moment. Moment to moment to moment to moment to moment. Imperceptibly, very slowly, but it's changing. And he referred to, modern science says, over a period of 7 years, every single cell in the body. So let's say somebody's 21 years old. They've had 3 different bodies, at least. Completely different. Not just like little different, but completely different. They're the same person, but But the body is changing. Completely. I mean, like, completely. Maybe the same DNA configuration, but completely different body. Like that. Body's changing. Okay. I'm going to end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.